And good evening and welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 77. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. And it is beautiful right now here in Chicago. Temperatures in the 50s and 60s over the last few days. All the crusty bits of snow have gone now, and that's been very exciting. It's been really, really pleasant, and I've been taking full advantage of this by doing my walk home from work and so forth as I used to. And indeed, I'm really, really enjoying this nice warmer weather. Now, apparently, it's supposed to get colder this evening and may even snow, though it has been so warm that I seriously doubt that any snow we get, and if we get anything at all, I'm sure that it'll be a flurry. Even if we do get a flurry, I don't think it's going to stick. It's been way too warm. There's plants coming up everywhere. The trees are starting to bud in earnest now. It's not just a few of the trees. It seems like all of them are now. And spring is finally here. Spring has sprung. Now, those of you who've been listening for a long time have probably noticed that my voice sounds a little bit different this time. And that is because my new sound system is here, and this is the first show that I'm recording on this new sound system. I have a nice professional quality Shure microphone here, and I have a Behringer mixer. This is the Behringer ZNS-502. Not the fanciest one. Actually, it's kind of the low end of the Behringer range of mixers, but it is actually enough for my purposes. So I'm getting used to this new setup. I'm not using the clip-on mic now, and of course that had not quite as good sound as this particular microphone, but I am enjoying this now. I do need to work on a little bit about setting levels and getting Skype to work and all the stuff. This is all in preparation for the live show, which is on the way. Yes, I know I keep talking about the live show, and I won't this time. However, it's been interesting because I had a very interesting offer this week to possibly do another show, and this would be a music show. Now, I did a music show years ago back in Athens, Ohio, back when I was at Ohio University on ACRN, the All-Campus Radio Network, and I did a goth industrial radio show from midnight to 2 in the morning on Friday night, which in retrospect was probably the absolute worst time slot possible. I figured, you know, it would be good, but, you know, midnight to 2 in the morning, people are at bars, you know, in that town. And I don't want to do that kind of a late night slot again necessarily, but I have been offered the opportunity to do a music show over on the LM radio network. And I think Lee Mills has been going around and inviting people to do shows on his network because he's trying to fill up a schedule just as the United Kingdom Radio has. And he does have the appropriate licensings apparently that people can do music shows on his network. And that should be exciting. I'm very tempted. I haven't really decided whether or not I want to go back into doing a music show or not. And if I were to do a music show, would it be similar to the one I did before, or would it be something different, or what? I just haven't really decided yet. But that's one of those things that, in the thought process right now, I'm not planning for it as of yet. My priority at this point is to get the live show going and get that started and get that up and going and hopefully keep that running smoothly. And I'm wondering, you know, can I spare the time? Because I'm already feeling as though I'm overextended. I really thought that it was very possible this show was going to be one of those semi-rerun shows. And I know that last show was supposed to be, but I found the time to do a show, and I'm finding the time to do a show this week as well. I'd really rather not do those unless I absolutely have to, and for reasons I think should be obvious. I mean, I want new content on the RSS stream rather than reruns, because I think reruns are lame. But you never know. And, you know, and if I do get into a time bind, then, of course, then I may be forced again to do that. And then if I do, for example, if I host another Plain Dudes radio episode, then those are very useful to allow me to do several things at once and also to get the old shows back online. But you've heard that spiel before, so I don't feel like I should be telling you again. At any rate, as you know, I don't really talk much about politics on this show. And this is going to be a rather more political episode than normal, because I really kind of want to touch on some of the points that I was talking about last time. As you recall, I was talking a little bit at the very end of the show about conspiracy theories And we're talking about a comment from Scott. And Scott was saying that he thinks that he is detecting a political bias in my show. And I don't agree. I don't agree with that. And I don't think that I am biased politically. However, I do have a few points to make about political bias, because this is a term that is thrown around a lot. And Scott may say I'm being biased by saying this, but that the term is especially thrown around on the right. And the reason why is because there is this article of faith on the right in this country that the media is biased against conservatives. In other words, that the media in this country has a liberal bias. Now, if you tried to actually pin them down on any particulars, they have a much more difficult time making their case. But this is one of those memes that has become so entrenched in the conservative movement that it has become an article of faith, and just people kind of take it for granted that this is true. But what is political bias anyway? And I think that this is something that you need to explore. Now, Scott usually refers to himself as a middle of the roader, and I refer to myself generally as a political moderate, and I don't necessarily believe that the two are the same thing. Now, I have positions that I hold that are very similar to positions that are held on the left, and I have other positions that I hold that are very similar to positions that are held on the right. Yet, I don't feel as though my political point of view is biased one way or the other. One of the things about my political point of view, and I've often described myself on the show as being a rationalist. And as a rationalist, I do want my way of thinking to be based on fact as opposed to rhetoric. And of course, most political discussion is based on rhetoric, and most political argument is based on rhetoric, and most political broadcasting is based on rhetoric. A lot of it doesn't have anything to do necessarily with truth. And I've been thinking about this a lot. And part of this was something that I think about anyway. But partially also because Scott brought it up in the case of the conspiracy theory. And, in the case of the conspiracy theory conversation, Scott was concerned, perhaps, that I was bashing the right too much. And I talked a little bit about that last time. I'm not going to rehash that here. You can go back and listen to episode number 76 at the very end, like the last 10 minutes of the show, and I'll talk a little bit about that there. Don't see any need to repeat it here. But I try to, as often as possible, base my opinions, and political opinions also, based on reality and not on opinion. And of course, sorry about that. I have some popping with this microphone. I haven't quite worked out how to avoid all of that. I do have a windscreen on the mic, and that gets rid of a lot of it. But bear with me. I still have to get used to trying to broadcast on this microphone effectively. Sorry about the popping. I know. Pop, pop, pop. Anyway, so let me give an example here of what I mean by basing my opinions on reality as opposed to rhetoric. So let's just take an extreme and simplistic example of a political opinion. And this is really grossly oversimplified, and I understand that the world doesn't work this way. But have a hypothetical situation here where you have two sides of a political argument. One side says that 2 plus 2 equals 4, and the other side says that 2 plus 2 equals 6. Now, a middle-of-the-road approach, and this is sort of how I understand this idea of the middle-of-the-road approach, is that you would not want to bash the people who say that 2 plus 2 equals 6. A middle-of-the-road approach would say, oh, well, maybe let's compromise. Let's say that, we have one answer that's far on this side, and we have one answer that's far on side. The middle-of-the-road approach would be that 2 plus 2 equals 5. But that's still the wrong answer. So if you have a very clear-cut situation where the truth is that 2 plus 2 equals 4, by saying that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is not biased against the people who are saying that 2 plus 2 equals 6. They're just wrong. Now, I understand that in politics it doesn't work that way, and that's because political issues aren't as clear-cut as math. There are no absolutes. There are seldom any easy answers that are unambiguous. Political and societal issues are often very, very complex with a lot of factors that feed into them, and there's a lot of room for opinion and for an interpretation of the facts, as opposed to math that, you know, you're either right or you're wrong. But let's not discount this math idea entirely, because if you're wrong about something, if you're a 2 plus 2 equals 6er, and you go out demonstrating with signs about how 2 and 2 is really sick, and people make fun of you, and people don't take you seriously, it doesn't make sense for you to actually cry about how the media is biased against you, and complain about how the media doesn't take you seriously. The fact of the matter is, to quote Stephen Colbert, or rather to paraphrase Stephen Colbert, is to say that reality has a 2 plus 2 equals 4 bias. So obviously, I think there are times when taking that middle-of-the-road approach and saying that 2 plus 2 equals 5 is the wrong way to go. Obviously, you want to stand up for what is true as opposed to what is popular, or to try to avoid hurting someone's feelings and say, well, you know, 6 isn't right, but maybe 4 is not right either, so I'll compromise and have it be 5. I myself am a 2 plus 2 equals 4 kind of guy. And I know that 2 plus 2 does equal 4, and that people who say 2 plus 2 equals 6 are just wrong. So where politics comes in is when you have these people who say 2 plus 2 equals 6, try to convince other people that 2 plus 2 does equal 6. And in a lot of cases, it's a situation where they're going to repeat this idea so often that a certain segment of the population actually starts to believe it. They don't want to examine the equation for themselves and come to the logical answer. They just want to believe whatever it is that they're being fed. And my position, of course, as a rationalist is everybody should add the numbers themselves, that they shouldn't believe what's being told to them as an article of faith, either by the 2 plus 2 equals 4 people or the 2 plus 2 equals 6 people. You shouldn't take anyone's word for it. You should do the equation yourself. And if the media continually reports that 2 plus 2 equals 4, and the 2 plus 2 equals 6 people, or I'll refer to them as sixers. If the sixers complain about media bias, does that make the media bias against them, or does that mean that 2 plus 2 actually equals 4, and that the sixers are just wrong? So I think that this is a very important question, and people should ask themselves, for all political opinions, any political opinion that they hold, and this doesn't matter whether it goes for, you know, the left or the right or libertarians or whatever. I don't think that it really makes any difference. People need to examine the facts and choose their political opinions and choose their political allies based on those facts, not based on rhetoric. Because there are always going to be those sixers out there who are trying to convince you that something that is true is not true, and vice versa. Now let's move on to something a little bit more complex, because obviously this idea of the sixers and the fourers is obviously very, very simplistic, and it's not a very good reflection of the actual level of political discourse of this country, though it's not too far off, to be honest. Sometimes politics is that ridiculous. Now let's go back for a minute to what Scott was suggesting back a couple of episodes ago. And he was suggesting that I may have a slightly left political bias. Now there are some political issues where that's definitely true. And particularly in issues regarding personal freedoms and as far as, right to privacy, that sort of thing. I would say that yes, probably I am to the left of the mainstream in this country. I suppose it might be more appropriate to say on those issues I am more libertarian than liberal, because I think the less interference the better when it comes to issues of personal privacy. But that isn't true for every issue. However, and I explained this last time, I explained it by mentioning that the issues that I talk about in this program tend to be issues of atheism and rationalism. So obviously religion is something that I talk a lot about. Superstition is something that I talk a lot about, and so forth. I've talked about, you know, the creationists. I've talked about, you know, a lot of other things. I've talked about psychics and so forth. Now, I think I'm being pretty fair to everybody here. I don't think that I've been way off base on any of this stuff, but that's because that's my opinion. I think that my opinions are right. But I do try as often as possible to base my opinions. In fact, I do always hold out the possibility that I could be wrong about something. And my mind can be changed on things if evidence, enough evidence is actually provided. So far, that hasn't happened. And it's been one of my frustrations with the show is that my ideas and my observations don't get challenged very often. Part of it is the fact that the show doesn't get all that much feedback. And I do encourage people to feedback because I do like hearing from people and I do want to hear from people. And as always, the email address for the program is tom@tomharrisusa.com. And I don't mind having my opinions challenged as long as, you know, somebody can provide evidence to support their point of view as opposed to mine. Now, I do want to point something out, a very basic fact here that I think sometimes gets glossed over, and that is just disagreeing with a liberal doesn't make you a conservative. And just disagreeing with a conservative doesn't make you a liberal. Scott has complained on his show a little bit about the binary political system that we have in this country. He actually has compared this to a video game controller where you have two extreme positions and you alternate back and forth between these two extreme positions. You either go all the way to the left or you go all the way to the right, and there's no ambiguity there. There's nothing in the middle. And he has often said that our political system is a little bit like that, and our country as a nation veers back and forth wildly between the far right and the far left. And there's some, you know, I think it's an interesting observation, but I don't agree. I think that the swerving back and forth is more akin to a sailboat tacking against the wind. And you don't necessarily go to the extreme of either. And the periodic veering back and forth, you know, when you're tacking in a sailboat, isn't the important part. The important part of that motion isn't whether you're going to the right or you're going to the left. The important thing about that motion is going forward and not going backward. And this is where I see my political opinions coming in. I want to continue to go forward and not backward. When you're in a sailboat and you're tacking against the wind, You don't want to veer as far to the left and as far to the right as you can. You want to just veer as far to the left and to the right as you need to move forward. So it's not really a binary system. Obviously, the extreme right position would be a fascist position, like nationalist fascism. And the far left position would be sort of this communist utopia, not utopia, but it would be this extreme communist society where there is no government, an anarchist communist society. That would be sort of be the ultimate of the left. Which do you think our system in this country is closer to structurally? It is actually closer to a far right system of government. You know, and we're in between. We're in this in between area where you have absolute freedom as opposed to very restrictive freedom. And we're somewhere in the middle. And we should be somewhere in the middle. The difference between Democrats and Republicans in this country is not so wide. As much as the Republicans would love to peg Barack Obama as a socialist, he's not. In fact, I would say that if anybody who says that Barack Obama is a socialist doesn't know anything about either Barack Obama or about socialism, because Barack Obama is definitely a pro-capitalist kind of guy. Those who compare George W. Bush to a Nazi, they're just as wrong. They either don't know anything about George W. Bush or they don't know anything about Nazism. This is all political rhetoric, folks. This is exactly what I'm kind of complaining about here. But isn't it interesting how the media is full of people talking about Barack Obama and his socialist agenda. The mainstream media is reporting this, and the people calling Obama a socialist aren't people on the fringes. These are the Republican leaders in the Senate and the House. These are our mainstream politicians. Whereas there were very, very few people who were calling George W. Bush a Nazi. And those who were people on the fringes. You didn't hear that kind of disrespect on the floor of the Senate or the floor of the House of Representatives. Make of that what you will. This is sort of the hyperbole and the exaggeration and trying to convince the people on the other side that 2 + 2 really does equal 6. And the stronger you are pushing, you know, towards these positions, the more inflammatory the rhetoric, the more obvious it is who the Sixers are here. And that's not to say that people who are yelling louder are wrong. That's not my point here. So let's not misinterpret that. But I think that people owe it to themselves to look at the facts, to examine facts carefully, to look at political issues from both sides as much as possible, because everyone has their own take on things, but to examine facts objectively. And to a very large extent, that's what the media does. And they do a pretty good job of it. Now, there are media outlets who are in this country that are more biased than others. That goes without saying. MSNBC, I think you can say, has a liberal bias. I think that's the only one of the networks that does. Fox News has a very strong conservative bias. And, you know, the two of them are bookends. I do think that Fox occasionally plays a lot more fast and loose with the truth. And I think that can be shown objectively. But pointing out that 2 + 2 = 4 isn't liberal bias, or conservative bias for that matter. But I do think that it begs the question. And, you know, let's just go back to my oversimplistic example here for a moment. If you have 10 media outlets, let's say 5 TV stations and 5 newspapers, and 7 out of those 10 say that 2 + 2 = 4, does that mean that they have a 4-er bias? Or does that mean that reality has a 4-er bias? I think that's food for thought. And I think that that's something that anybody who's trying to make a claim of media bias should look at very, very carefully. Once again, I do like hearing from people. The email address of the show is tom@tomharrisusa.com. I always do like hearing from people. Now, in the last few minutes of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about Alice in Wonderland, because Pete and I actually went to go see this last weekend, and I realized that this film is still in the theaters, and I don't want to give too much away. I'm not going to give away any spoilers or any real specific details, because I do think that people would have more enjoyment if they're actually able to see this. Chris Reardon actually talked about going to see it on his show. And I do want to point out something that he didn't, and it seemed to be a little bit of a point of confusion for him. And that is that this film, which is directed by Tim Burton and stars Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, Stephen Fry, among other people, is not an adaptation of the Lewis Carroll book. It's a sort of sequel to the original Alice in Wonderland. And when Chris was saying, you know, they cut out the scene of Alice going down to the beach. I know exactly what scene. The movie doesn't have that, of course, because this movie takes place after the events of the original two novels. Quite a bit after, actually. I mean, it's something on the order of 10 years. And I thought they made that very clear in the movie, but I suppose that if you're not really paying attention, that might slip through. But I have to say, now, I have very mixed feelings about the film, as I often do, because I seldom, you know, have rave reviews or rave pans of films that I see. Overall, I would say I give the film a solid C+, if you're grading on a letter scale. Visually, it is absolutely spectacular. Now, I sometimes have a problem with 3D. Not seeing 3D, like Lee Mills was talking about in his show. I don't have a vision problem that prevents me from seeing 3D. But I do have occasionally a problem when you put 3D images in a certain depth of field. Because the way my eyesight is I've become more and more over the years, I've become more and more nearsighted. And there's a certain range, and I've noticed this. I noticed this when we went to go see Bolt, which was another 3D movie, and I noticed it with Coraline a little bit too, where there's a certain place where I don't see the 3D image well, and it becomes very blurry. And I'm very happy to say that this movie didn't really use that area very much. And I really couldn't even tell you where that area is. I think it just kind of depends on the style of the film, who's making it, where the, you know, so forth. But, I said for story, I think it's a solid C+ overall. The special effects are, of course, fantastic. I mean, the entire movie is special effects, basically. And there were a number of things that were notable about it. I think that, by and large, the design work was amazing. It was a lot more colorful than most of Tim Burton's films. Tim Burton has this tendency to have very subdued color palettes in his films. He likes blue. And you notice things like his Batman films with Michael Keaton, where everything was blue and gray and black. And then you had, you know, Edward Scissorhands, which had that same kind of a feel, kind of all blue and gray and black. And The Nightmare Before Christmas, which was more, you know, grays and browns and oranges. You know, it's a little bit different. But this film was very colorful. Now, the design elements that I found this interesting and slightly annoying is that this is a Disney film. That is nothing against the film, to be honest, but they designed some of the design elements to echo the original Disney animated Alice in Wonderland film. So this is almost a sequel to that animated Alice in Wonderland film. The problem is that animated Alice was probably the very worst Disney film ever created. It was awful. I guess the design elements weren't really the problem with that film, but it was the liberties that they took with the story and some of the silly stuff that they threw in there that I won't watch that film. I've seen it a couple of times in my life and I never intend to watch it again, but this version was far superior in every way to the original Disney Alice in Wonderland. But it was interesting and it was notable because it was obvious. The Queen's Castle, the Red Queen's Castle, you know, it was the same plan as it was in the animated feature. The Mad Hatter's table was the same as it was in the animated feature. Now, of course, it was, you know, 10 years later and it was a little darker and a little bit more Tim Burton-y because Tim Burton likes that whole darkness thing. But it did kind of echo back to that movie, which I have strong negative feelings about. There were a couple of silly moments in the film that I'm sure they threw in there just for the kids. That's okay. That didn't destroy the enjoyment of the film for me. I have to say, the 3D was absolutely fantastic. The music was really good. Danny Elfman, as per usual, since it's a Tim Burton film, Danny Elfman has to do the music. And I thought overall the acting was pretty good. I wasn't real happy with the character of the Hatter, but, you know, you can't be happy with everything. You know, so I say, solid C+. If you have a chance to go see it, spectacular 3D effects. And if you're a fan of the old Disney Alice movie, you are going to love it because they bring back a lot of the little elements that they had in that original film. At any rate, I am out of time, so thanks for listening. That's another show down the tubes here. The email address, once again, tom@tomharrisusa.com. Would love to hear from you. And I hope that next show, which will be on the 25th, I will have some more concrete news about the live show. Since a lot of the tests and so forth are going to be done this weekend, I'm hoping to have a definite answer for you very soon. Anyhow, this is Tom in Chicago, Illinois, signing off. See you next time.